going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Keith Frantz on. Keith, how you doing, brother?
I'm trying to decide whether or not last night's game actually made me physically sick or not.
Yeah, I think you could tell by my tweets. I was quite disappointed in the effort for most of the evening. And, you know, in retrospect, you know, obviously you watch something like that, you get disgusted and you have reactions, immediate reaction. I think the minimal of what is deserved as fans is effort, and I didn't see a lot of effort there last night, which I found quite disappointing. But again, you know, big picture, it is preseason game two, so maybe I think I went a little bit overboard on some of the anger. But there are causes for concern. There are causes for hope also. Why don't we look at both? What say you? And your initial impressions on the first two games?
I thought it was very disappointing after the first game where they, you know, didn't even shoot well from three, but they found their way at the free throw line, and it came out with the win, and you saw the effort and the hustle throughout the game. Going into last night, Robin Lopez is playing his brother. Jabari Parker's back in Milwaukee for the first time. Effort should have been the last thing in question for me in that game, and I get it's the preseason, so... you know, we'll move on, and it, no harm, no foul in a sense, but the effort should have been there, bare minimum.
No doubt on that. I mean, there's some guys I kind of feel like, you know, Holiday, I've just had enough of Holiday. For anyone who still feels that Holiday's a better answer at the three than Denzel Valentine, I mean, I don't know what to say other than pound sand. They both had the exact same defensive rating last year, so there's this idea, I think, out there generally that Holiday's some, like, over at, you know, better than average defensive player, which I think is absolutely ludicrous. He's not. He's so slightly built, and he hasn't seemed to put on an ounce of muscle since he's been in the league. And then he's firing up, you know, three-pointers at a 1-for-10 pace. I can't take any more of it. Valentine's three-point shooting is sorely missed. What say you?
Well, I'd say Valentine's career field goal percentage is about what Denzel's three-point percentage was last year, and they're both undersized, in my opinion, for the small forward position. So if you're going to play somebody undersized at the small forward, you got to at least have the offensive production out of them, and that's something Holiday has not brought, at least to this point, through two preseason games or in his whole entire career, for that matter.
Amen. Amen. Well, is there anything good that you've seen in the first two games? Give me what you're happy about, what you saw that brings you some hope.
Well, before Zach went down, Zach getting to the hole has been promising. Last year, he actually had a career high in free throw attempts, which was nice to see coming off the ACL. So before he had his thigh contusion, whatever the hell happened there on that play. That was encouraging to see, as well as Bobby Portis in general looks very, very good.
Yeah, offensively. Defensively, he's been, I think, his usual train wreck. He's just not ever going to be a great above-average defensive player. You know, he rebounds pretty well, but I agree with you completely on his offense. He's been very impressive in the post, in the perimeter, everything. He's done, I think, pretty well. But, you know, just when he's out there and you do not have another answer – I think Fred has to figure out a way to keep Dunn or Wendell Carter Jr. on the floor at all times and space their minutes or together, figure it out somehow, some way. But there is a noticeable, you know, delta and drop in defensive in defense overall when one of those two is off the court. And yesterday there were several times where both were off, and it's just an embarrassment. You know, so I think that trend is going to continue. I hope it doesn't, but I suspect it will, especially with how Lopez has looked. I thought defensively he's just been awful, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what his problem was yesterday. I thought it was an absolute embarrassment for a guy who's really on this team for two reasons, to set an example and play defense, and he failed in both miserably.
No, yeah, Rolo, that kind of surprised me because he has been, you know, the rock of this team, and last year I felt we needed to get him out of here as soon as possible because he was contributing towards winning just by being that, you know, foundational piece that you could count on to be there and bring the same effort every night. And last night was kind of rough to watch from him, which was surprising. I hope it's effort. I hope he hasn't officially, you know, lost a step going on 31 years old here. But yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
You know, I tweeted it out. I think it's readily apparent that Wendell Carter Jr. is already a far superior player to Lopez, not just, you know, on offensively, but defensively. On both ends of the court, I think he's already better at the age of 19. And I've seen enough to say he should be starting. He's a better player. End of story. No reason to wait any longer. You know, what say you? Do you agree with it if that decision is made by the end of this training camp and the end of this preseason to give the starting spot to Wendell Carter Jr. at the center position?
I don't see a reason why not to, because of the defense being so bad and Wendell's versatility defensively is just superior to anybody on our team, probably even Dunn, when it comes to versatility, because he can switch on to even guards, which we've continued to see in preseason. He's not having a problem with, which is extremely encouraging. So I think you have to give him the start just specifically from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah, and there, to me, it was all illustrated on one of Giannis' aggressive attacking the hoop. There was an absolutely fantastic, just a stellar block on Giannis, one of the best plays I've seen defensively by any Bull in the past few years, that was taken away by an embarrassingly bad call. Some of these horrific calls that they throw on rookies, I don't care if he fouls out every game. If he's going to play defense like that, that's all I want to see. I thought it was one of the better plays I've ever seen from on a defensive end for a Bull. And he got screwed out of that. And then you contrast that with what I saw from Rolo on a drive where he just basically, you know, Olayed it and did the Matador defense and just let, you know, Giannis get a dunk. It was so striking to me, both those plays that happened, I think, in the second quarter. Could be wrong on that. Regardless, just throw him in the fire. Let him learn. Because I think that these two have the potential to be the best front court duo for a decade, with Lauri kind of trending a little bit on the offensive end, being a little bit more offensive-minded, and Wendell Carter Jr. being a little more defensive-minded. Two guys that are just going to be seamlessly cohesive and working together to maximize this team. Why not? Let's get started now. Let's get the learning process started now. I don't know what the wait is for.
Well, I think the wait comes from the concept of not handing anything to a 19-year-old, making him earn it. But Frollo's underperforming and appears to have lost the step, and this continues throughout the rest of preseason. Fred's seeing it in camp as well. There's no reason to hold the guy back just because you're trying to make him earn it. If he's already earned it, give it to him. Get him prepped, get him ready for when Lauri gets back. And I do think you make a very strong point there, and it's obviously what we have to hope the Bulls are thinking when they drafted Wendell Carter, was Lauri Markkanen is our best projected player. We want to build around him, and him and Wendell should be a perfect combination going forward. So holding Wendell back, I think, holds the team back.
Agreed, 100%. Are you concerned at all about LaVine? He had this moment yesterday where he drives. We've all seen the replays, and I immediately almost felt like vomiting, thinking that could have been a serious knee injury. Apparently just contusion. It's nothing serious. Any type of injury to knee, to me, is always, is concerning, but especially with this guy. But I was pleasantly surprised over the first two games with the quality of his defense. I think it did look improved. He had a couple contests yesterday on three-point shots that were just, he looked like he was, just lightning quick, shot out of a gun, getting to the three-point line to contest. And I thought he had a really nice steal in game one. I thought I saw some nice things, nice improvements from him. But my concern about LaVine is he is so slightly built. Like, I don't think he's a really big guy at all. That's pretty obvious. And I do have concerns about him and his ability to stay healthy going forward. Do you share those concerns, or do you feel that I'm just overstating it a bit?
I think you're overstating his build. He's just one of those guys that is, lighter than a feather, and it's why he can fly through the air as such. The defensive end, I agree there as well. I do like to see the effort. He still has a lot to learn, and I'm sure there will be plenty more film sessions where he's sitting down and they're like, hey, weak side, help defense here. You got to be more attentive and stuff like that. But in general, his approach has seemed to be more of an all future all-star caliber player. He seems to want to play, and obviously it starts there. The knee thing, or the thigh contusion, whatever the hell it is, I am worried. That didn't look good. That didn't look like a thigh injury to me. It didn't look like he grabbed his thigh, and he kind of went in, got bumped, had an awkward extension. You could hear him through the TV, "Oh, come on." And I know my stomach sank, and I was like, "Oh God, here we go."
Yeah, I didn't hear that. I didn't hear that. I hit my head.
Oh no, down. Yeah, you can hear him. Oh, come on! Like, why are you pushing me? You know that I just came off this knee injury. It's preseason, and you're pushing me like that. Yeah, it didn't sound good.
Oh wow. Let's get into a little Jabari Parker. I know you were never a fan of the acquisition. I know you. It's obvious by some of the tweets and. You know, he hasn't played well, no doubt about that, especially last night was a complete disaster. But let's hear a little bit about your take on Jabari Parker, and I'd like to get, you know, this idea, which I've kind of come up with. Well, let's start there, and then we'll get into the second part of the question.
I would like to comment on his vision has been impressive, and that's something we talked about after the acquisition that we both felt may have been somewhat underrated. Mm-hmm. We have seen that ability come through, and I think as long as he continues to do that and look for that throughout the season, that there's plenty of room for growth. Obviously, shooting 1 for 12 isn't going to cut it, and the defensive effort, well, shooting 1 for 12 isn't going to cut it. I don't care that you're 23 years old. You're making $20 million this year, and you're supposed to be proving to your hometown that you want to be a future all-star for this team going forward. I can't see the... you know, the lack of effort, but it could also be lack of conditioning, because to start the game, it seemed like he was trying to go at and run with Giannis, and then after 3 attempts of that failing, he was kind of just like...
That's possible. Yeah. Ugh. Definitely possible. I mean, I will admit to some level of concern over... I thought the video I watched of him last year at the end of the season with Milwaukee, he looked a little bit more spry, a little bit more athletic, a little bit more active. I thought he had a good first game. There were moments there. He handles the ball so well for a big man. It's so impressive what he can do. And when he gets in the open court, I think he does a lot of good things. I think his defense one-on-one, is especially against the bigger guys, is definitely – you know, his deficiencies are a little bit overstated there. He's not great off-ball defender. We all know the problems there, and he's not going to be stop the best threes in the league. He's just not. He doesn't have the quickness there. But I don't think there's a lot of great threes in the East, which is good. So I think you can get away with putting him in at the three for, you know, large periods of times when you're playing most teams. And he's going to take advantage of matchups on the offensive end. But the thing about, you know, going 1 of 12, that's going to happen. Guys are going to have off shooting nights. Every good player has those nights. His first career, he shot 49%. His 3-point percentage has gone up all 4 years of his career so far. So, you know, I think I'm not concerned about that. You know, I am concerned about, and you know, I've made this point. I'll continue to make this point that Lowry getting hurt, you know, not good for the big picture probably. Not good for the short term, but for the big picture, this could be a blessing for the Bulls. It's going to open up some opportunities for some players. But I think most importantly is, I think we all agree, Parker's probably best suited at the four. By getting minutes at the four, he's going to produce. I just feel if he's healthy, he's going to put up numbers at the four for the next, you know, 7-8 weeks. And in doing so, he's going to improve the value of Jabari Parker. And then Lowry comes back, you know, mid-November, late November. We're going to have... November, December, January, for these two to kind of build some cohesion and see if they can actually play together. And if they can't, if they show that together they're not good and not better than the sum of their parts, well, then I think Parker becomes a valuable kind of trade piece in with his career numbers of 15 points per game, either to a team that's contending for a title as a good second or third scorer, or for a team like, let's say, Sacramento, Minnesota, or one of these teams that's never going to get an elite player in. Because that contract is, you know, $20 million a year with an option year two. I think that's a pretty manageable deal. So what say you about that? Do you feel if the Bulls will try to move him if he can't play at the three this year?
Well, I think you have to at least try. If you see that he's not going to be a part of your long-term future, you got to try to get something for him. But the issue is he does make $20 million. You have to take that much back in salary. and most of the big contracts that teams wanted to get rid of, or you might have been able to explore something like that, like Dang or Anderson, their issues have already been resolved. So the problem will be finding a partner that's willing to give you something of value that doesn't require taking something back that takes away all that value. You know, maybe a George Hill kind of contract. I believe he has an option for next year, only partially guaranteed of $3 million, similar to a Sheik, where if, you know, Colin Sexton takes off in Cleveland and the Cavs are making a push and they want, you know, somebody like Jabari to throw at the four with Kevin Love at the five, that could be something to explore. But I do think Jabari's contract will make it hard to move him for something of great value, as well as, I think, similar to Nico, that team option, he may have some kind of trade rights in there. If they don't want to pick up his second year, he might be able to say, I don't want to go there. So I'm not positive on that.
Yeah, I think I haven't seen that anywhere. You think that would have been reported somewhere if that's true. It's possible. Because I think most of the time with Nico, we were all aware that he had a no-trade clause. But I haven't seen that anywhere. I hope that's not true. If that's true, that's, I think, pretty disappointing. Because I think...
I don't even know if it has to do with the player's contract. I think it might be a rule in the CBA when you sign. But either way, I'm not 100%. But that is something that I'll have to look into that would be concerning. If they got to pick up his second year in order to complete the trade, obviously that kind of throws any good returns out the window.
Chandler Hutchinson, what's your take on the first two games after watching him? I've seen a lot of, I think, very impressive moments defensively. Offensively, less so. He's got to hit the three at a better rate, and he's got to look a little bit better on that end. But overall, I've been pretty impressed with his athleticism, and especially on a defensive end. I'm hoping he could be that answer as kind of that perimeter defensive stopper eventually.
Similar to Wendell, because Holiday isn't that great of an option, I wouldn't be mad to see Hutch start at the three. Yes, I have a lot of concerns with the offensive end. The three ball has looked horrible. He airballed one last night. I'm sure a lot of that's probably coming from trying to speed up his shot with the work he's been doing with Fred and overthinking. But Holiday ain't hitting the three either. And at least from a defensive standpoint, which seems to be our biggest concern, with Lowry out, throwing Hutch in at the three between LaVine and Jabari makes good sense to me. Then you have Dunn, complimentary player. LaVine, scorer. Hutch, complimentary player. Jabari, scorer. Wendell Carter Jr., complimentary player. You have a good balance there. You should be able to figure out how to defend effectively with all that versatility.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of good things. I also want to touch on, like, LaVine not shooting a three yet. I don't think that's good big picture, but I'm saying just for the preseason, I think the message has been sent to Zach, do not settle for a three. We want you attacking the rim. That's a good thing. I think the play of so far of Chris Dunn has been overall fantastic, shooting 61% overall, 50% from the field, hasn't missed a free throw. Pretty good defense, although yesterday I did see a couple disappointing plays, but definitely in the first game. I am just super high on that kid, and I love the idea of putting him in the post, taking advantage of – he's a pretty big point guard. He's got great athleticism, great length. I love the idea of him taking these smaller ones in the post and then surrounding him with the shooters that we have at the four and five, and you kind of like almost invert the court where you got the little guys down low, the big guys out in the perimeter. I think it's a great, and we all saw his fantastic move in game one where he just spun around and dunk. I think Peyton might have been on him. I can't recall who was.
No, it was
Holiday.
It was even
Holiday.
Better for him. It was Drew Holiday.
Yeah, Drew Holiday was on him during the play.
I think he might even have an all defensive on his resume. So,
Do you agree with those two? Do you like that idea of maybe Zach laying off the three-point line a little bit more and keep on attacking the rim, which I think I've seen the first two games, but also Dunn's
does
play.
Have several seven-plus three-point games throughout his career, so discouraging him from shooting wouldn't be the way I'd put it, but definitely encouraging him to attack the rim. We saw with Jimmy Butler, getting to the free throw line is important. For you, for your team, to get a rest. It stops the game. It allows you to get set on defense. So there's a lot of things with Zach going to the hoop and either drawing contact or finishing at the hoop that benefit the team as a whole. So I definitely see where you're coming from, but in no means do I want them to discourage him from shooting.
Yeah. Campaign, what's your take on him so far as at our backup point guard position?
If we're going off of what I saw last year, in the moments where he wasn't playing hero ball, I think there's potential. Now, like last night, when you have Portis, Blakeney, and Campaign all kind of playing hero ball in the same lineup, doesn't exactly work that great for me, and we did see Derek Walton Jr. in garbage time shoot pretty well, move the ball fairly well. I would like to see him get a little bit of opportunity to try to earn a spot on this roster.
Yeah, I think Cam had 7 assists in game one. I thought he played fine at the end of last year. I thought, you know, I brought this up. I think he's kind of the manifestation of everything people dislike about Garpax. He represents their biggest faults in the Doug McDermott draft, in the trade to Oklahoma City. I mean, those are some of the worst moves that they've had, right? You know, trading Taj and Doug for him. And so I think that's why people are
About that second, Fred.
Oh, yeah. I have, and I will continue to forget about it because you know how I feel about second-round draft pick. That said, I do feel I thought he played fine last year. I thought he had some really nice moments. I mean, gosh, he shot 38% from three. If he continues to do that, he'll have a long career in the NBA. Defensively, though, he's not good, and he needs to continue to improve and continue to shoot at a high rate from three, continue to set up other guys. I thought he did a nice job in game one. I think he had 7 assists in that first game, and then yesterday was just a complete and utter disaster. But that's one area where I think we might need to upgrade next year. And I brought this up, and I'd like to get your opinion on this. Let's say Derrick Rose has another fantastic year. Or not fantastic, but a good year. Another plays similar to how he did last year at the end of the season for Minnesota. Would you consider bringing Derrick Rose back on a reasonable contract to be the backup point guard for Chris Dunn here in Chicago?
I mean, Derrick Rose has got to retire in a Bulls jersey at some point, right? I don't know if he's planning on calling it quits anytime soon. Obviously, this season could dictate how he's feeling about that. I'd have no problem bringing Derek back. I think you might run into a problem with the fan base if he's sitting behind Dunn.
Why?
That is the logical sense, and it makes sense, and it keeps him fresh, and it's, you know, the direction that his career is moving. But no, I was on board with bringing somebody like Rondo back again for this year to be a mentor for Chris Dunn. Obviously, Rose would be more less of a mentor and more of just a playoff push piece. But no, I completely agree with that sentiment. We are going to need a veteran point guard of some degree, whether that's in the middle of the season this year, picking somebody up if we're in the playoff race, or if it's next year.
Yeah, I don't understand. I think there's danger there. I guess you kind of highlighted it. There's danger from both aspects of the fan base. A group that will be demanding Derek to start, which I think is ridiculous now. I mean, he's 30, just turned 30 today, I believe. He's a backup point guard now probably for the rest of his career. And I think he could kind of become, you know, Jamal Crawford-ish as a sixth man. I think that's a good role for him for a couple seasons. But there's a problem, I think, with another group of fans who just don't want him back, which I never understood. I don't understand the hatred for Derrick Rose. Those 3 seasons before his injury were some of the best I've ever had as a Bulls fan and some of the most enjoyable moments I've had. I don't understand the hate for the kid. It's basically what I'm trying to say. If you really dislike the guy, and he's made mistakes, but come on. You know, I think there's far worse people in the world than Derrick Rose. What say you?
I'm on the same page as you. I can understand people that have problems with his off-court stuff, you know. Just because he was acquitted doesn't mean whatever. It should mean it, but to some people it doesn't, and it never will. And that'll always be the official stamp on Derrick Rose. He's just a bad person. I don't want him near my team. But as a Bulls fan, I don't understand that logic. Youngest MVP in league history. I think I own about as many pairs of Derrick Rose's shoes as I do Jordan's. I don't understand the hatred in Chicago for him. I know some fans feel that he quit, that he just didn't want to do it, and he gave up on his hometown. And I tell those people, you're thinking the wrong way. I can only imagine how much it kills him, knowing what he was and what he was for his hometown, and pretty much, you know, being shipped off like a problem child. So I don't understand the hatred for him. I don't know how you can at least even, you know, accept the nostalgia factor and just let him back as a backup. But we'll see.
Plus,
what
he'd be a massive step up. I mean, right now, if you dropped him back as a backup point guard position, isn't that a perfect role? Isn't he a better answer in campaign?
You know, no, I think that's a no-brainer. I think 15, 20 minutes of Derrick Rose a night instead of 15, 20 minutes of campaign, I don't know how anybody could dispute that.
Amen. All right, my man, great talking with you as we do a quick show here for the after games one and two, and we'll be talking again early next week. I look forward to it. All the best to you, brother, and let's go Bulls.
Yeah, take it easy.
All right, my man.